So I've actually, as I was doing my research, I saw someone had described you as a national treasure, which I thought...
Is that good or bad?
Which I thought might amuse you.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I'm like, let's say it's a good thing.
I always say a legend in my own lunchtime.
Welcome to the very last episode of Podcast from America for 2010. We're going out on a high. My guest today is the incomparable Bonnie Langford. Anybody who has followed musical theatre or indeed watched television in the early 70s will know Bonnie from when she won Opportunity Knocks in her show with the great Lena Zavaroni. Up until more recent times, a lot of people may only know her from Dancing on Ice, which she took part in 2006. She now lives in New York, and I have to tell you this. My friend Shirley Green, Shirley knows Bonnie and Shirley knows me, and Shirley asked me if I would like to interview Bonnie as I was flying to New York to interview Josh Brolin for Wall Street 2. And I said I would love to. I'm a huge fan of musical theatre. And Shirley fixed up this interview for me, and I'm so pleased she did. Bonnie came to my hotel, the London, in Manhattan on a Sunday morning in September, and we ended up having this great chat. So that's who the Shirley is that we're talking about. And I'm just very excited, so we'll get straight into it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to introduce it to you, the wonderful, the one and only, and the national treasure that is Bonnie Langford. So, welcome to Podcast from America.
Thank you.
Thank you for turning up. Now we've got our coffee, I think we're ready to start.
As soon as we have cappuccino, we are fine.
Yes, that's it. So... I'm very honoured that you've taken time out of your Sunday morning to come up to my hotel suite.
Oh, don't be silly. It's good. It's a change. And also, I like to get to London. I've not been here before. I think it's rather camp and gorgeous.
So I think we just need to give a little shout out to Shirley Green, who set this interview up. Lady Shirley, sorry to give
Lady
her full
Shirley.
Title. And she told me that you were appearing in Chicago here.
I have been. Yes. I'm not at the moment. I've done it quite a few times, actually. And then I went out on the road with it as well. Lady Shirley surprised me twice. Because I did it, first of all, they had me do, I've done Chicago in London.
Yes.
Yeah. A couple of times. Mm-hmm. I first did it when I had finished Dancing on Ice, the ice skating show that I did. And I went straight into the show. Then I went back again a couple of Christmas later. And then they found out that I was here, staying in living in New York. And I've got a green card and everything. Right. And basically they said to me, look, we need to get you in the show, but we don't have really any spaces. Could you do a couple of weeks of the tour, which meant going to Canada, which was fine.
Right.
And then I did a week on Broadway. I told Shirley about it. And she said, oh, you've got to meet a friend of mine, this lovely lady called Jamie DeRoy, who lives across the street from here. And so I was expecting Jamie DeRoy to come and see the show on this particular night.
Right.
I opened my dressing room door and there's Shirley, and she'd flown all the way from LA to come and surprise me, which she duly did, which was fantastic. Then I went back into the show and did about 4.5 months, and then just recently they got me to do a few weeks of the tour, which was great fun. And we did, one of the dates was in Palm Desert.
Ooh.
So I get this message at the stage door. There's some fans waiting for you. And I'm thinking, fans? Who's this? And it was Shirley and Raymond standing at the door patiently. The Bonnie fans. So she's fantastic. She's always surprising me. I love it.
She's absolutely wonderful. But this, it must have been a little bit homecoming because I've been doing some research on you.
Ooh.
Yes, I just thought, goodness. I can't just go from memory. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that would just be ridiculous, but you were in Gypsy.
Yeah, here
as a child,
yeah,
actor.
Here, and I lived on 7th Avenue in,
right,
this hotel that is still here. It's called the Wellington. And when I say it's busy, I think it was very busy.
Yeah.
In the evenings.
Right.
And it was 1974, and I have to say New York has changed so much.
Right.
Since then, it was. I mean, you didn't walk down 8th Avenue then, ever.
Right.
And basically, I came with my mum. She'd never been past Bognor. And so suddenly, here she was, thrust into the whole madness of New York City. I was playing Baby June opposite Angela Lansbury down at the Winter Garden.
Oh, my goodness.
And we lived, as I say, up here. We lived up here on 7th and 55th at the Wellington Hotel. And that's basically as far as we got. I think we took the occasional Greyhound bus. But my mum was so scared. scared and so frightened of being in New York. We really didn't venture anywhere. I don't even much remember going to Central Park.
It's blocks away or something.
So I kind of made up for it by coming back this time. And I'm pretty much doing everything. And it's amazing how you... If you have to, you just do.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you were just saying about parking. I don't know how interesting this is for anybody, but I am always obsessed with parking and driving around the places that I go to. I was like, where do you park? And just it's crazy.
Well, I have to say, the same lady who Shirley introduced me to, Jamie DeRoy, she does these amazing cabaret shows, and I've done a couple of them for her. But one of the best tips she ever gave me was absolutely nothing to do with theatre whatsoever. She told me about coupons on the net, and you can go on the internet... And you get on a particular website and you get coupons and you print up coupons. And I tell you, I am coupon woman. I go everywhere. Wherever I park, this parking lot that I was going to now, I have a coupon for there.
Really?
So I will get my cheap parking. And in fact, when I was doing Chicago for the sort of 4 months that I did on Broadway, I thought exactly that. What am I going to do about parking? This is going to be a nightmare. So I got onto this website that's something about bestparking.com or something, and I typed in what I needed. In a couple of days later, I got a call from someone, and they offered me such a good rate that I took it. And it was monthly parking. And in fact, I went into the show, and all the other people in the show were saying to me, how did you get this cheap parking? Because I got... And maybe I was just lucky that I got a better deal than half the people had got in the show. And it was an absolute blessing. I mean, getting around New York is tricky. It's complicated. The parking, I think, on the street, the most of the reason I put my car in a parking lot is because I can't work out the signs.
No, they may as well be in another language.
It's like no parking here, no standing except on Sunday, or between 7 and 3 or 2 and 9. I'm so frightened of getting towed away.
You're like, I'm intelligent. How can I not work this out?
I did my parking, and it was the best thing ever. But there are many, many parking lots around. That's the good thing.
Yes.
Whereas in London, I went back to London last Christmas and I did a few days of Chicago. They said, oh, you're going back. Could you stand in for Ruthie? Ruthie Henshaw was doing some shows and she had to take some time off. So I went in. It was hysterical. I took my costume in a hand luggage on the plane, my little frock, and I went to the theatre and went, there's my costume, and walked on the stage. Didn't know any... I mean, it was just crazy. What I've done the last few couple of years has been just mad. But great fun and very challenging and fulfilling at the same time. And I went in and I tell you, parking in London was a lot worse than trying to park in New York.
That's true. So, well, if you've just joined us, you're here with Parking in Big Cities with Lisa and Bonnie, our new show.
Absolutely. I think it's fascinating and most informative.
It is most informative. It's hilarious. So I just want to sort of go back a few years, because I do like to do this with people. I don't know if it's just me just being too curious, but when I was doing my research about you, everybody knows you. You were... you've been acting since you were 4 months old or something. It's ridiculous that I read. But I'd like to know, were your parents in show business? I couldn't really find any.
I've got to write the book. It's no good. I've got to write the book.
You must write the book.
I did. I mean, my family history is kind of fascinating in some respects. There's no theatre whatsoever on my father's side at all. And in fact, he was the one who was really able to enjoy it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of that. Because he had no premonitions, he had no thoughts about it. He just enjoyed what went on. On my mother's side, my great aunt was a ballet dancer. And it seems, I mean, I was trying to find this out from my mother the other day, it seems that for some unknown reason, my grandmother was one of three girls.
Right.
And they lived up near Liverpool. And for some reason, I think because of my aunt's ability to dance, they all came down to London and she went to Cone Ripman, which then became Arts Educational, and various ballet schools. And then she danced with Ninette de Valois. And then she went on tour around all of the Far East and everywhere. I mean, I think she lived quite what they would call a glamorous life.
Yes, it was very daring.
I think it was very daring at the time.
Yeah.
And my grandmother was a fabulous pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother never... thought she didn't ever do it professionally, but then she discovered some photo albums, and there she was doing a sort of traveling players, I think, like the Good Companions, you know, like concert party they used to call it. So there is that in the background. All the boys in the family going back were doctors, and all the girls appear to have some kind of leaning towards theatre.
Right.
And when I was born, I have two sisters. There's 10 years between them, basically, and me. And at the time when I was born, my eldest sister was about to go to the Royal Ballet School as a 10-year-old. So it was within the the family. Also, the great aunt that I mentioned who went to the Far East, when she came back from her travels, mm-hmm. she opened a dance school, which my mother then took over. So it was kind of...
Sort of organically created itself.
But I don't, I mean, I don't think it was ever intended that we did it as showbiz kids.
No.
It was about dance, it was about training. Right. And that seems to be the whole sort of thing. I kind of broke that mould by doing...
Yes, you became very famous at a very young age as well. After I mean, well, yes, hugely. I mean, things were different back then. I mean,
yes,
I remember you and... watching you on TV, and Opportunity Knocks, which just, you know, it was a long time ago now, but it was at the time, everybody, it was like the X Factor of its time or whatever.
But if you think about it, look what's happening now. Yeah. Exactly the same thing. America's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, they're the same thing.
Exactly, yeah.
And they've just been reinvented.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it was exactly the same. Yeah. Please send your votes in, but they used to do it by postcard.
Yeah.
You know, by postcard.
Yeah.
And,
milk
and that was it. I mean, it's just technology has changed.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the whole process, the thing about it now is it's so much quicker,
mm-hmm.
And therefore the decline is much greater as well. The rise and fall is a much higher peak.
I was wondering what you thought about that whole culture now, because obviously your career has been, I mean, you've had having an amazing career that spanned a long time, which is, you know, wonderful and unusual, I think, for a child star.
Yeah.
So... and I wonder what you think about some of the young girls, or the kids actually, you know, boys as well.
I was quite interested, shows. Actually, to see recently, they just had America's Got Talent, and there was a little girl on it.
Which I've been watching.
She was beautiful.
The opera singer,
Jackie
Evanko.
Yeah, she was beautiful, I mean, she has an absolute gift there, and very charming, mm-hmm. sweet, and I looked at it and I went, well, there's your winner.
Yes.
And I kind of said that in almost a sad way, and it was interesting because Sarah went on it, Sarah mm-hmm. Brightman went on the final and sang
I
with
saw,
her.
Yes.
And I thought it was, did you not think it was interesting what Sarah said?
Something
about she has a very special voice and
yeah.
would have a very long career, but I don't want you to...
Yeah.
She said something on the lines of, don't
do
give
this
it all
now.
Away,
yes.
it's too early for
yeah.
you, it's very young. So I'm really pleased that she didn't win it, because, you know, it's hard. Not only is it hard to sort of do all that, it's wonderful. You know,
mm-hmm.
we all love the fact that we see such... pure sort of natural talent going on in
mm-hmm.
its infancy.
Right.
But what we're terrible at, I don't know whether it's a nation thing as Brits or whether Americans are the same, we keep people in a box.
Yeah.
And we don't want them to move out of that box.
Right.
And yet, you know, as a child, she's got to progress. She's got to grow. We all grow.
Sure.
We're all children. I remember once, I'm sure it was a misprint. I'm absolutely certain this was a misprint. But I thought it was quite interesting that I was doing a play somewhere in England, and it was complete. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It was so totally different to anything I've ever done as a child. It was with Sandy Toksvig and Dilly Keane, two of my bestest friends, and we were having a complete screen. It was nothing to do with me whatsoever as far as my past is concerned. And yet there was a photograph. They used a photograph to illustrate this, you know, describing what this piece about the play that was coming up. And they put a photograph of me, and underneath the caption said, Bonnie Langford, former child. And I thought, it says it all, really, because that's all I was a child. And that's all any of us are. And sometimes
child.
I will go into an interview, you know, like in the past, sometimes. I went through a phase of being quite uptight about it. Now I'm like, oh, whatever. I was uptight about it because I hadn't had a nervous breakdown. I hadn't gone into drugs. I hadn't gone into rehab.
Yeah.
I hadn't, you know, tattooed myself or pierced myself or done anything that was... I don't want to turn around and say I hated what I did as a child, because I didn't.
No.
Because if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't be sitting here today and I wouldn't be the person that I am today. However, it's very hard to move on from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the fact that it said former child, and as I say, I often say to people, if you go in, like I said this once to a TV director, and I was going to do a television interview, it was quite high profile, and I didn't have very long.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it's all done in very short
space. Oh, yes.
So we've got 7 minutes with you.
Yes, that's why we do this.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's great.
We can ramble on for hours.
As you can tell, I like to talk. And I was about to do this piece, and I needed to get across why I was there. Yeah. You know, they only put you on these TV shows because they want you to promote what you're doing. They only put you on because you've got something out there.
Yeah.
And yet they go all snooty and say, oh, you're just plugging. Right. And you go, well, why else did you ask me, quite frankly?
Yeah.
Anyway, what they wanted to do within this sort of, maybe it was a 5-minute piece, they wanted to show 2.5 minutes or more, maybe 3 minutes of me and Just William, which I did when I was 12 and I was playing a 6-year-old. And
okay.
I just said, no, please don't.
Yeah.
And they said, but we know we've got the clip. And I said, but first of all, it's cost you a lot of money because it's very expensive to get that clip.
Right.
And secondly, please can I just talk about now?
Yeah.
If people, yeah, but people remember you. This is what you said. People remember you from when you were a kid. I said, well, then they can.
Yeah.
That's fine. You don't have to show it again.
Yeah.
They will replay that in their own mind, in their own memory. Mm-hmm. They'll have their little video camera working in their heads when they see me or hear my voice or see hear my name. They'll put that on. Can we not just talk about things now?
Yeah.
And he said to me, he just couldn't really understand it. And I said, well, then, you know, I don't really want to do this because you'll get more out of me if you do it, if we can talk. And in the end, I said to him, I said, you see, when you came for this job as director of this big TV show, did you bring your Christmas Nativity video with you?
Right.
And he said, no. And I said, yeah.
There you go.
Do you get my point?
Yeah.
And he went, okay. Yeah. And he didn't play it. And I was really grateful to him to understand that. But, sometimes you have to go, okay, do you have to take me back to the
It must be like sort of sometimes carrying a 10-ton weight around behind you, you know.
It is in England.
Yeah.
That's why I love it here.
Right, right. Actually, we need to talk about that. So we're just going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll talk about you living in America, which I didn't even know about.
Oh.
So I have questions.
Uh-huh.
We'll be back after this.
More parking lots.
Yes.
Ask me how do I feel? Ask me now that we're cozy and clinging.
This episode of Podcast from America is sponsored by Brits in LA, a wonderful social networking group for expats who are in Los Angeles and have no idea where to buy their PG tips. Come and join them every Tuesday morning for breakfast on the patio of Chicone's in Beverly Hills. You can get a full English breakfast for $16, or just check out their Facebook page and come and join in the fun. Craig and Eileen will be delighted to see you.
And if I were a watch, I'd start popping my spring. Or if I were a bell, I'd go ding dong, ding dong, ding.
So we're back with Bonnie.
Hello.
Hi. Glad you're still here.
I know. I'm still having my cappuccino.
I've refreshed my coffee too. So you're living in America now, and you said you mentioned earlier you have a green card. So I'm very impressed, obviously. So how long? And you're married to Paul.
I am.
Who, funnily enough, I think this will be interesting for everyone. I'm actually in New York because I'm here to interview Josh Brolin for The Scotsman. He's in Wall Street too, and so is Bonnie's husband.
Yes.
I think he plays a father.
I think Josh Brolin has a better part than my husband.
Yeah,
yeah, my husband plays
He's
a father.
He's not featured on the poster, obviously.
I can't understand why. It's a shock and a disappointment. I will have to talk to Michael about it. Put Paulie Grunert on there. No, Paul just did a couple of days on the shoot. What's so funny is that he was playing a barber.
Yes.
And he had to pretend, obviously not go anywhere near, pretend to cut Donald Trump's hair, which
right.
we just thought was the funniest thing. And then talk about 6 degrees of separation and Brits coming together.
Right.
And, 6 degrees of separation. So I'm in Chicago at the time doing the show on Broadway, and there's a lady there who does the wigs, who looks after the wigs. She's fabulous. She works in during the day in a hair salon that's run by a British guy. It's
mm-hmm.
called Tommy Guns, and it's down right near Teen Sympathy down in the in the city. And so she works there. So my husband gets this part in Wall Street where he's going to have to be a barber. And my hairdresser on Chicago works in the salon, which they used as the location.
Oh.
And they used her boss because he looked so funny, because he does the whole British thing where he has this amazing moustache, like
yes.
the curly moustache.
Yeah.
And he had just had his basement done out as a complete sort of barber,
uh-huh.
a very British sort of barber. So they used it as
it
the
did.
Location.
It looked amazing, actually. It really, really
funny?
Worked. Although I think they must have cut Donald Trump out because...
Have they?
Because I would have noticed if Donald Trump had been in there. And there was just a shot of Paul and Michael Douglas.
That's
I think they may have cut out
wow.
the Donald. Yes.
You see, we were thinking that well, if they put Donald in it,
yes.
then it would be such a sort of cameo, such a sort of novelty to have him in there that they wouldn't cut him out. Or maybe he was so
Yes, I don't know, but they did have another surprising cameo who's uncredited, who I can't say in case it's a spoiler. But I'll tell you afterwards
when we switch off.
So you're married to Paul. You've been married quite a long time.
15 years.
15 years.
Congratulations! 15 years. It's been fun.
If I had a posse, we'd be cheering
and
clapping.
Thank you so much. We'd be going awesome.
Awesome. Good job. And you have a daughter.
I do.
Is she 10?
She's coming up for 10.
She's 10
in October. And she loves it here.
Yes. Oh, and so when did you move out here?
It was all a little odd, really, because I came out here as a kid, and I just have always loved this place somehow, and only ever come back to visit on numerous occasions and stuff like that. And I never really thought about... I went to Los Angeles a few times, sort of in the mid-80s and early 90s, and thought, you know, shall I give it a go out here? And I've had various visas. Mm-hmm. And then I've always sort of been a bit... and then something came up in England, and I went back to England, and I was doing Hot Shoe Show and things like that. Right. And I just didn't see it through. And there was a part of me that felt that I was a little bit out of the box as far as particularly LA is concerned. They sort of have a look, and I didn't really fit into that look, and thought, you know what, I can't do this kind of... When you're out of work in LA, it's very difficult. There's a kind of a desperation about it, and I'm not very good at that.
It's not fun.
No.
It's tough.
I think you have to be in a certain place, and I wasn't in that right place in my head when I went there. And but I've always wanted to think that I could come back here at some point. And when Bibi was about 2.5, Paul was doing Anything Goes in the West End, the National Theatre production. And I got this call completely out of the blue from a casting director in New York saying, please would you come over, we want you to meet the director of this show to be in it. And I kind of went, where did that come from? You know, anyway, it turns out that this guy knew me from Gypsy and various things and all that sort of stuff, whatever. So I kind of was, I was not in performing mode at that time. I was in mummy mode. And, he said, just come over for the weekend, please. I want you to meet this director. So I got it all together. We arranged it all. And then on the, I think it was like the night before, literally the Thursday night, I get a call at 9 o'clock at night from this casting director saying, you don't have a green card. And I said, well, no. I never said I had a green card. Yeah. And, anyway, it was, the show was such that I would have to have a green card or whatever. So he said, look, just, this is crazy. We'll just leave it for now. Whatever. And I was like, great. And as it happened, the show didn't happen at all. So that was interesting in itself. And whatever. But I thought, why is this carrot being, you know, why has this come into my life? And I talked to various people about it who were like, why didn't you go? Why didn't you go? As if it was my fault. And I said, oh, they wanted me to have a green card. And they said, well, get one. Actually, it was Biggins who said to me, Christopher Biggins, who said, get one. I said, I have to live there. And da, 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 da. Anyway, then introduced a load of people to me. It said, well, so-and-so's got one. She's there. She's back and forth and all this. You can manage them. It just gives you the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I spoke to this lawyer who, basically, to cut an extremely long story short, it seemed, why not? Just go for it. So I put in all my stuff, which was fascinating in itself because I'd forgotten how much I'd done.
It's a process, isn't it? It really makes you look at your life.
Also, what was extraordinary was that I had to phone, you know, you have to get these letters of recommendation.
You do.
I never realised I was the most well thought of out of work actress in that country. It was such a great boost to my ego. I'm like, how lovely, these people love me. They never employ me, but they love me. So I kind of, that was interesting. I put the whole thing in and forgot completely about it.
Right.
And then 5 months later, if that, I get this phone call, another 9 o'clock at night phone call. Hi, this is your attorney, just to say congratulations. You are now a U.S. resident. You are an alien of extraordinary ability.
That's it.
And I went, pardon?
Yes. No one's ever put it like that before.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, I think I was about to do the skating. Paul was in Sound of Music and all that. So we had this, and also it was for all of us. It was for all of us. So apart from anything else, I thought, well, as far as, you know, as our daughter is concerned, maybe she'd want that, and she's got that for the rest of her life.
It's wonderful. It's
so
a wonderful
opportunity. We didn't come for 2 years.
Yes.
We just kept bobbing back and forth.
Okay.
And then when Sound of Music closed, and I had finished in, I can't remember what, but I was doing loads of stuff, Guys and Dolls or something, and we basically said, you know what? there's nothing basically coming up that's terribly exciting in England. Let's do it. Let's go for 6 months and give it time. Mm-hmm. And that was a year and a half ago.
And you're still here.
Yeah.
How wonderful. I mean, it's a great opportunity. And I think, you know, if you're lucky enough to be able to do it and also work as well, you know, you've got the ability and obviously...
Well, it's interesting, you know, the thing that I think is great about going to a different place is that when you go back home, mm-hmm. which it would always be, you go back home, you see that not a lot has changed. But you have.
True.
Your point of view has changed. Mm-hmm. And that can be a good thing or bad, but whatever it is, it gets you, you know, I mean, we're very good in England at moaning.
That's true.
We're so good at moaning that we don't often do anything about our situation. So we thought, well, come on, let's just do it. And if we don't like it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We've done it.
It's almost like, what have you got to lose?
Exactly.
At that point.
I mean, it's more complicated as with when you have a child.
Of course, yeah.
And she, you know, one of the things we wanted to make sure was that she was settled and happy.
Yeah.
And she's in school in the American system.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, it's wonderful for her. She's very happy.
And you live outside New York, you know, in the sort of the crazy hustle and bustle of Manhattan or Queens or Brooklyn or whatever.
Well, I think you have you have to either be a different type of person or else you have to be extremely wealthy.
Right, exactly, yeah. Where's Donald Trump again? Where's he got any room for it? Yeah, I know, it's... I don't think I'd want to land a 10-year-old in the middle of Manhattan just out of nowhere.
No, you know, whereas we live in a place just outside New York and it's basically... It's like being in Surrey. We found about the only place... We had some friends there as well. And we found about the only place that has what we would technically call in England a high street. With little stores that you go in and out of and you walk.
Or Main Street, as they call it in America.
Well,
it's their equivalent.
Yeah, and even today there is a sidewalk sale and a festival. They close the street and they have, you know, lemonade stands. It's very wholesome and very homely and very family and community based.
I was just wondering, because your daughter's, as you say, almost 10, is she showing any signs of wanting to follow in your footsteps?
Have this family. I mean, there's not, as I mentioned, my sisters earlier. And my eldest sister, particularly, her children are all very much in the public eye. And in theater. I mean, they're not children anymore. My eldest niece was here for a year and a bit doing Mary Poppins, playing Mary.
Right.
And when we were out, you know, last year, and she loves it too. And her husband is the musical director at the moment on Sister Act, mm-hmm. which finishes soon.
Wow.
And he was on Hairspray. So, okay. And her younger sister is currently playing Meg in Love Never Dies, the Phantom sequel.
Right.
The next one down was in Dirty Dancing and is just about to join Matthew Bourne's company as one of the sisters in Cinderella. And the one younger than that, who is just 16, is currently in Bells Are Ringing. She should be going to college, but she's like the rest of them and says she wants to get out there and work. And in Bells Are Ringing at the Union Theatre in London. So, I mean, I have this... whole family.
It would be almost rude not for her to do it.
Well, you know what? The thing that is really, I find interesting is that I don't want her to feel she has to.
Right.
And I also, the thing that I didn't ever have, and I kind of came across this with my niece, the second one, Summer, who was in, she played Maria in Sound of Music, and Andrew did this thing where he put her into Hollyoaks, a sort of a teenage soap.
Yes, yes.
That's on Channel 4 in England. Mm-hmm. And he basically did this kind of experiment with her, which kind of scared me a little. But they put her into this soap as a character called Summer, which is her real name anyway, which I found a little worrying. But they put her in this soap as a character who was a performing arts student who wanted to be in theatre and be in the West End, and her main aim was that she was going to stalk Andrew Lloyd Webber until she got into a show.
Right.
So this was the storyline of the soap.
Okay.
Which then became a reality.
Oh.
Because, as it happened, she had auditioned for Sound of Music, got the job, and then he decided to get publicity by doing this whole...
So Andrew Lloyd Webber put her into Hollyoaks.
He put her into Hollyoaks.
As well. Good, he was so powerful.
Oh,
yes.
I know. In order to create this character that then became reality.
Okay.
And then she went into Sound of Music for a year, which was bizarre because my husband was in Sound of Music as well at the time.
Really?
So, So he was playing Uncle Max, and in real life he was her uncle. I mean, it's just quite weird. And at the time, it was interesting because at that point they wanted to pull in every kind of publicity angle they could get. So they did this whole thing about me being the auntie.
Okay.
And I was a little cautious because, you know, I would support her until the end of the earth and so proud of her. But it's very interesting, especially the British press, the way they take things, that you don't want to suddenly be either having to uphold some kind of reputation or almost, you know, I always think of myself as baggage, so I wouldn't want to be her baggage.
Okay.
And I suppose where I'm going with this is that at least when I was kind of carving out whatever career I had as a kid or as an adult, I didn't have anybody as baggage.
Right.
I didn't have to say, well, I'm so-and-so's famous, you know, my auntie's famous or my mother is famous or, you know, and I think it's very difficult for people in the industry who have, you know,
famous relatives,
well-known parents, because they do have, you know, undoubtedly that gets put in their way. And it can be used against, you're not seen for what you are. You're seen as either in a fortuitous position, you know, because you've been given this entrance to a profession without the talent, which isn't true.
Right.
Or you have to work harder because you've got to uphold this thing. So, and I didn't want to be this aging auntie who was tagging on the coat strings of my now famous niece. Fortunately, at the time, I was doing Chicago in London, so I was, I was doing okay myself, so I wasn't having to say, oh, I'm getting publicity on the back of my niece, which is something
Oh, my gosh, this is so complicated. It's a minefield,
it's silly.
Isn't it?
It's so silly. And unfortunately, you know, the thing about being in Britain, I love England, but I do find it very interesting that they do like to pull you back to your roots all the time.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think that's always a bad thing, but I do sometimes think it's a bad thing that we should let people fly, we should celebrate them for the good that they do and for the talent that they have.
They're definitely better at doing that in this country, in the States, than they are in England. I mean, it's almost like, hey, remember this person and when they did this and here they are and we're just
I swear that if Michael Crawford, for example, went back to England now, they would play Frank Spencer.
They would. I can guarantee you that would happen. Yeah, I can already see the promos with him hanging onto the back of that bus or whatever on his roller skate.
Yes. Yeah. And it was brilliant.
But it was 30 years ago.
But he's not there anymore.
It's so funny. I mean, the reason I ask you about your daughter, and I don't know if this is something you want to talk about, but obviously I was looking, watching you, some clips of you on YouTube last night, which you may or may not thank me for. And that was fine. It was adorable. But I don't want to harp on about that. But I do want to talk about Lena Zavaroni, if that's okay with you, because she was
brilliant,
such an incredible singer. And I was watching some clips of the Lena and Bonnie show. I don't know why I'm getting a bit emotional, but she was she was somebody who I, like yourself, grew up with and watched her career. And, you know, she died, I think it was 11 years ago now, when she was 35, from eating disorder.
Well, she didn't die from that. This
or complications of, sorry, complications from surgery.
Yes.
That was right, yeah. Sorry, yes. my mistake.
Well, no, but it was due to the fact that she was so weak.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was, I will never forget the day that it happened. And this is what our lives are like. And you know, I look at people who are really sort of high profile in the media and you think, oh my goodness, what do you, I mean, if I get this and I'm like Mrs. Nobody from Nowhere Land, think what they get. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. I had been out very late the night before. I think I had been somewhere up north. I'd been doing my own concert and had driven back through the night, got back at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I was in bed, asleep. Mm-hmm. Phone rings, my home phone rings.
Ooh.
And hello, I'm from the local radio station. Just wanted to get a comment from you because you probably know that Lena is dead. And not only was that shocking, it was also the way it was done.
Brutal.
I was like, what? The only good thing they did was that I said, I just was completely shocked. And I said, I can't say anything. I'm really sorry. I can't say anything. And they went, no, we totally understand.
Yeah.
And actually left me alone.
Okay.
Which was the only moment that they did leave me alone.
Right.
It then became this kind of chasing me around my hometown, trying to escape saying anything, and I'm nothing, you know, I wasn't anything part of particularly of her life.
Of course not.
The first thing I said was I didn't think she would ever do it, because my immediate assumption was that she had committed suicide.
Right.
Which I found totally out of character, which it was.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that Lena was she was actually a fighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And great fun, and had this unbelievable voice. Unbelievable voice. I mean, amazing.
You can't even...
Extraordinary.
If anyone's listening to this, just go and look up on YouTube Lena Zavaroni singing Going Nowhere by Neil Sedaka.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. Which is... And she was 17 when she recorded that particular segment. I don't even know what show it was on. You have never heard such an amazing singer. I mean, truly, truly incredible. I mean, it gives you chills. It gives me chills thinking about it.
She never lost her voice.
No.
This was the one thing that kept her. She had problems with it all the time. She was very aware of it. I mean, we did a special together, and she was constantly worried about her voice. She was constantly, she was 12, 13 at the time. You know, we were very young kids, but we were like these adults. And the reason why we bonded was because we both had the same attitude towards work and towards our lives, and yet we were kind of the only two people who could empathize with each other.
Probably understood each other very well.
Yes, completely.
Yeah.
Prior to that, everyone had always said we were probably hating each other and laughing around. Then suddenly we were the best of friends. And we used to go to the mile together and all this, and we would just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this show together because we were at a stage school, and we had this fantastic lesson, which we all loved, everybody loved, where we would sing a song and then this wonderfully groovy choreographer would put steps to it and we would do the thing. And then one week she said to us, would you go away this week and next week come to me with either a trio or a duet, team up with whoever you want and come and do your own numbers. And that's what Lena and I did.
Right.
And we had such a great time. That's how. And then the following week, suddenly all these suits appeared in our school classroom. Like, you know, David Bell, head of ITV Light Entertainment. And you were like, what are you doing here? And this was when that idea was there. But we remained friends, although our careers really took different paths.
Sure.
And yet Lena was one of these people who was an absolute sort of paradox, because, as I say, she was very strong. But she would always cancel appointments. She didn't want to meet anyone.
Right.
When it came to it, she so wanted to sing. The one thing that kept her going was her singing, and she loved it. But she knew that, you know, she said to me, I might do Grisabella in Cats. And I said, that would be unbelievable. That would be wonderful. I wasn't in it at the time, but I said, that would be incredible.
Yeah.
But she was rightly scared of coming back, because I only want to do little things. And I said, well, that's not going to happen.
No.
Because your story is so great that people are going to want everything from you.
Yeah.
And if you come back, you have to be ready for it.
100%.
You have to be ready to do all these interviews.
Yeah.
You have to be ready to do all the stuff that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to want to put you in it and keep it quiet.
No,
it's
no
gonna
chance.
It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
You know? It's going to be huge. And that's great. But if you feel you can't do it, then, you know, you've got to know where you're at. And she was always kind of worried. And then she was convinced that she had this thing, part of her brain that was kind of this black spot in her brain, and she wanted it got rid of. And in the end, she convinced a doctor to do that. And then she didn't manage to come through the operation, which was absolutely tragic.
Yeah.
And what I find worse is that I went to her funeral, which was in some respects beautiful, in other respects, it was like a circus.
Really?
It was frightening. It was bizarre. It was completely bizarre. It wasn't real. And the one thing that I remember was that as her tiny, weeny coffin came through the church, this black butterfly, I swear to you, this black butterfly from nowhere flew away and out through the back of the church. And my husband turned to me and he said, there she goes. And I went, that is weird. That is just unbelievable. I'm sitting in the church, they're taking communion, this taps me on the shoulder and goes, and starts saying, can I have your autograph? And I'm like, no,
what?
Really not now. No, not now. Please, this is not the right time to do this.
Oh my goodness.
And then at the very end, everybody left, and they played a piece of Lena. I think it could have been Going Nowhere. I can't remember now. Actually, I don't think it was. It'll come back to me soon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brilliant. The way she sang was just brilliant. And everyone left the church. Nobody stayed and listened. Oh, we sat there on our own, Paul and I, and we just listened to her singing. And I said, this is what it was about. And so I didn't go to the rafter thing. I just thought, I can't do this. It just seems too unreal. The whole thing was unreal, and yet they still wanted a piece of her.
Yeah, it's...
He still wants a piece of her. And then all they ever want from me is, well, what's the answer? Why was she? Why were you okay and she wasn't? And you can't discuss somebody else's life.
No, no.
And I didn't want to be that insensitive to the family.
No.
Who were very mixed up. Yeah. As you would be.
Yeah.
About the whole...
There's a documentary out there. You can see the
whole
thing.
Well, they did one.
And,
they did one, which was terribly, terribly sad.
It was sad.
Terribly sad. And yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But you see, it's almost as if that follows the path. Mm-hmm. It's this whole thing of child stars are not allowed to... They either
tragic.
Have to live a tragic life or else they have to have some major breakdown, change course, and then you can start again. It's almost like a reinvention.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I'm a bit of a... Of a strange one, because I haven't turned to drugs, alcohol, addictions, or anything like that. My only addiction is Cadbury's Dairy Milk, and there you go. How boring is that?
Maybe we should go and get some chocolate. Well, we're going to take another sort of short break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some more up-to-date things.
Something
more jolly. Yeah, so we'll be back after this.
They heard the breeze in the trees sing melodies, and they named that the start of the blues. And from a jail came the wail of a downhearted frail, and they played that
I would say, could I be bold enough to say you had a bit of a renaissance about 4 years ago with the whole Dancing on Ice?
Yeah.
When you, I mean, you banged it. Oh my God. That was just before I moved to America, actually, and I watched that series, and you look so fit. I mean, you don't look a day over 12. It's really quite sickening, people. If you were looking at what I'm looking at, You'd feel so...
Well, you know what? When you come to the States, you have to.
You have to,
that's
I know.
A good thing, too.
Yes, I should be going for a run in the morning.
Stop.
But so you did Dancing on Ice, and it just seemed like you were a natural ice skater. I mean, how on earth, did you even contemplate doing
ignorance.
Some of the stuff?
Ignorance. Complete and utter ignorance.
But you were wonderful, and the nation embraced you, and you did really well, and then you obviously went on tour. You did the Dancing on Ice tour, and that seemed to have sort of catapulted you back into the public eye.
Sort of,
In another way, in a new sort of way, another chapter.
And I didn't have to eat bugs to do it.
No.
It was interesting, because, our industry has gone through this whole thing of, basically, we have gone through this whole renaissance of if you do become a celebrity, for want of a better word, which I kind of hate, it now seems that it's almost a gladiatorial sort of situation to be in, that you then therefore have to go in these programs that if you survive them and you're not killed or humiliated along the way, then you kind of get put back into doing what maybe you could do before, that you were doing before, but didn't have the opportunity.
Yes, it's a funny rite of passage,
isn't
it?
It is a bit, and I do understand it, because, and even on Broadway, you look at all the shows on Broadway, and they all now have a TV name in them, or a movie name. It says a lot about the industry, the fact that, first of all, there aren't the movies or the TV shows being made, because ultimately, people would, in a way, they would much prefer to do one TV show and get pots of money for it than have to do 8 shows a week and really earn your money.
Right.
But also, that they put Broadway, they put them on Broadway, and people are prepared to go on Broadway now, because unless you have that kind of guarantee, you're not going to get people coming in and seeing the show. You need that. You need a certain amount of celebrity to be able to do your job in a way.
Sure.
And I understand that, because you have to pay the bills. You have to whatever. Yes, I was carrying on doing my job, but, I was a little frustrated. I was doing my own show all over the place. But, yes, it did come to the point where, I had been offered I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, the Jungle Show, 4 times, and I had turned it down 4 times. I just couldn't bring myself. I said, I can't do it. And I can also see the headline, you know, oh, Bonnie screams and screams, and then I'm back, right. You know, screams at her, you know,
we
and
could
I
write
know,
it now. Yeah, yeah.
I know, and I said, you know what, I think you, if you do those sort of challenges, you have to be up for it.
Right.
You have to be up for anything, mm-hmm. and you have to just embrace it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could. And also, I don't want to leave my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a private person. I actually don't want to be seen sleeping on TV.
Right.
I probably snore.
No, it's very invasive, that
yeah.
show particularly.
And I think if you can
yes.
do it, that's great. I mean, as I mentioned before, Biggins, Christopher
yeah.
Biggins, he did it. He won it. It was brilliant for him. And he loved every minute of it.
Right.
But that's
character.
Biggins. And
yes.
he's adorable. And I'm
yeah.
so glad he was able to show the real person that
yeah.
he is, actually. And I totally accept I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so and my agent was sort of saying to me, you know, it's come to the point, you're going to have to do one of these. So Dancing on Ice came along, and I said, you know what? The good part about this is that, first of all, you don't have to stay over.
Right.
You don't have to have a sleepover.
You can
on
go
camera,
home at night.
Because
yeah.
I don't really want to be seen going to the bathroom, you know.
With your little toothbrush. Yeah.
This is my job, not my lifestyle.
Right.
And so, and then the second thing was that I knew all the team. I knew all the director, I knew the costume designer, I knew all
right.
the team, and they were a light entertainment television team,
yes.
really good at their job. And I said, you know what, they're ultimately going to, they need to have a good show,
mm-hmm.
and I know that the only person who's going to humiliate me is me.
Right.
So let's give it a go,
mm-hmm.
and I just didn't know about ice skating. I said to my sister, I said, I'm going to do this ice skating show, and she said, but darling, you'll break your leg. And as if it was a given, I said,
yes. thank you.
Not necessarily,
you
I could try it.
Yeah.
So, and at that point, I was the reserve.
As
I wasn't
was.
Meant to be in it.
Really?
I wasn't meant to be in it. So when the show went to air, I'd only had 3 weeks training. And so I was very much
what
a novice. And to be honest, it was all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
I was terrified.
Yeah,
I was
sure.
completely terrified. And the fact that they kind of... I was actually talking about this yesterday. It's so funny. My husband is hysterical because I was then, at that point, when I started the training, I was doing pantomime in Guildford in Surrey. So I was doing two shows a day. So I was having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to the ice rink, skate for a couple of hours, and then go off and do two shows. I was absolutely exhausted. Had no idea what I'd taken on. No idea at all. And, but I loved the fact that what I really loved was I loved the artistic excitement that you got from Christopher Dean and Jane Torvill. They were fabulous. I loved their mentality and their approach to work was exactly the same as mine, and I hadn't had for a long time, which was this absolute 100% commitment, work all hours God sends.
Right.
And, you know, there's not a lot of that goes on anymore. We all try and sort of shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And also, it was okay for me to say, how do you do something? Because you do your job for so long that you feel you should know what you're doing.
Right.
Whereas
okay.
I had
yeah.
no idea.
Uh-huh.
You know, they'd say to me, okay, you're on the edge of the rink here. We want you to skate out to the middle and stop. And I literally turned and I said, how do I do that?
How do I stop?
Okay, I don't know how to start, let alone, and then the stop, what do you mean stop? I don't know how to stop. And it was okay to ask
right.
it. I didn't feel stupid. I was like, okay, I'm not expected to know how
right.
to do this.
Yeah.
But when I then, they said to me, right, this is your first routine, we're going to swing you by your leg. I just laughed out loud. I went, you're crazy.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, they said, no, you can do this. So of course I believed them.
Yes.
Because I didn't know anything.
And
better.
It's Torvill and Dean.
And
I believe
you
anything
say no.
they say.
You
yes.
go, okay, you think I can do this? So on this particular session where I was learning this being swung by my leg, the first time I did it, it was great. I was like, oh, I can do this. And then the second time I went to do it and I did something wrong because I didn't know any different. And I just went, oh, and I banged my head. And I decided there and then I would not get off the ice because I thought if I got off the ice I'll never get back
yeah,
on.
Yeah, because that was a big knock.
Yes.
I mean, it was.
They edited it very well though.
Yeah.
It made it look as if I got up straight away and did it again. There was about 15-20 minutes where I was kind of breathing deeply and going,
I'm
oh
sure.
God, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
But I felt fine. I didn't have a headache and all that stuff. I phoned my husband on the way home and I said, I banged my head. And he said... Did they get it on camera?
went, there you go.
Thank you very much, Mr. Greener.
Well done,
but in
hubby.
Fact, it was great that they did because that took away from it being, from my first story being
right.
all about being a kid.
Okay.
Because they actually focused more on what I was doing rather than what I had done.
Right.
And in fact, straight from that ice skating, I got phoned up to see if I could be in Chicago. I'd never even been up for it. So the fact that
yeah.
I basically had to learn to ice skate to do a show that I could already do. Which is the whole celebrity thing we're coming back to again. But, you know, I understood that...
That's the way it goes.
You have to bring the audience in.
I was going to ask you about that, because obviously there are now reality shows that audition stage stars. You know, there's the Lee Mead who won Joseph, and then there's Jodie... Jodie Prenger and Connie. Yeah.
They've just done another one for Wizard of Oz.
Whose name I can't remember.
Connie Fisher.
Yes. There we go. Who did Maria? So, I mean, what do you think? I listened to EP Elaine Page, for anyone who doesn't know, on Sunday on the Listener Game Player. So, you know, she's always had a bit of a, I think, I don't know if I'm projecting a sort of healthy scepticism about this, although she's you know, she's never said anything detrimental.
No.
But it's slightly galling, I would have thought.
Go on.
No, but I was going to say on the surface, but when you dig deeper into people's stories, there's never the overnight sensation that you think. But having said that, it's still... It's a reality TV show.
I think it's very interesting. I think it's interesting how Sir Andrew has enabled theatre to be on TV and to make it a viable thing. Because the one thing I like about New York above London is that in New York they celebrate theatre. They make the Tony Awards a huge event.
They're wonderful.
Absolutely. It is a very... You come out of the stage door and you feel there is a high regard and respect for having been on the stage. I don't think there's that same understanding in England. I don't understand why, because we have some fantastic people, we have some fantastic product, and I think there was, I can't remember, I was doing a radio show a couple of years ago, and I think I looked up that it was £341 million was generated in London income from theatre alone, from the fact that, you know, the subsidiary things, the hotels, the transport, all the, you know, the taxis, all the restaurants, all the stuff that is going around theatre.
Right.
And I think it's a shame that we don't even have... We have the Olivier Awards. They don't even have them in a theatre. They don't televise them.
There's nothing.
I think it's really sad. I think it's really sad for the industry. It is a valuable industry and should be given that kind of support.
Yeah.
And therefore it will become viable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's... You know, you come into a show in America and you are respect. Oh my God, you're on Broadway.
Yeah.
I don't think you get the same understanding.
That's
whereas,
certainly
you know,
kudos.
So Andrew has tried to sort of bring
it.
That.
Yeah.
So by putting it on TV, that's the way you get into people's living rooms.
Yeah.
That's the way you get it out there. That is also the way that you have like a £5 million advance for Wizard of Oz,
mm-hmm.
because you will get people in theatre who haven't been to theatre before.
That's true.
That is great. Therefore, not only do you have that income, you also have a lot of equity and, you know, BECTU members are now in work.
Right.
There is no point having a beautiful theatre if it hasn't got a show in it or anybody seeing it.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that most of the people who have won these competitions are people who have trained,
Absolutely.
Who have been to drama school,
mm-hmm.
and who therefore have only needed that platform
yes.
in order to get out there. And if that's their platform,
yeah.
then I think it's great. Yes, it might skip the few stages
mm-hmm.
that you need to get to. I mean, Lee Mead, you mentioned Lee.
Yeah.
Lee had been in Phantom. He was the second cover for Raoul
right.
and had been for a year and a half.
Okay.
And Andrew had never seen him.
But
he was in your show.
Exactly.
And he took a big risk
right.
by going into the competition because he left the show.
Wow.
So he left a paying job in order to try for something, but it paid off for him.
Something bigger.
And also, he was the one that therefore could sustain 8 shows a week.
Right.
That's the only thing, and I mentioned before about it being a much more fast-track situation,
mm-hmm.
and that suddenly, you know, from nowhere, people are catapulted into the industry on its highest level
right.
without having grown.
Yeah.
And therefore, if it doesn't work for them or they can't sustain it or they get to a point where they think it's real,
mm-hmm.
all the madness... that it's a very fast drop and there's actually no safety net, and that's what I think is interesting. I know that Connie, when she first went into Sound of Music, had a lot of problems. Some of the company resented her. It's not her fault. She just went in for a competition. She had the guts to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if she won it, then, you know,
yeah.
all power to her. But I think a lot was expected of her that she hadn't learned along the way.
Right.
And so there were certain things that she did. She didn't really understand the protocol of being a leading lady. I was extremely lucky to start as a youngster and work with some incredible people. And the most incredible of all, I would say, was Angela Lansbury.
Well, yes, you mentioned her at the beginning. Mm-hmm. What a legend.
And what a leading lady.
Yeah.
Because it's very interesting. You have to lead a company by example. Mm-hmm. You have to be friends with the company, but you have to be different. You mustn't be patronizing, but you can't ultimately be one of the boys all the time.
Right.
You have expectations of you, and yet you want to be part. It's
a fine line.
It's very difficult, and I think Connie found that very hard at first. Mm. And I think sometimes she was treated unfairly, mm-hmm. and I think that she wanted to be everything to everyone, and you can't do that.
Right.
And as I say, there sometimes isn't the support group around mm-hmm. when you need it.
Right.
And you know, you learn so much through going through the stages. And there isn't, but there's no such thing anymore in any industry where, you know, you have a progression. You don't start anymore as an apprenticeship and then think that you'll end up 50 years later with a gold clock.
There's nothing like that anymore.
And in a way, what's happened in the world with the recession and everything is what we've been going through in our industry all our lives.
Right.
Welcome to my world.
We're just catching up with you guys.
Yeah.
So, well, just before we wrap up here, I just want people to know that you do have a website that they can go visit. Yes, bonnielangford.co.uk.
Thank you.
Go and check it out, people.
Yes.
And what's coming up next? What's happening now?
Well, we're just getting out there doing what we do. You know, there's various shows coming up or whatever that might happen, but who knows? And it's interesting to be seen for what I am rather than what I was. And that's an interesting progression in my life, to walk into a room and not... It's great that I don't have people with preconceived ideas,
yes.
but it can also be quite daunting. But what I am doing, just quickly, what I'm doing, my daughter's birthday's coming up, and it's great because we're going on a cruise, and I get to do my act, which I did 10 years ago exactly, and so we've got a little celebration on a mini holiday. So
Aww.
I'll be in San Francisco for a day or two, which I'm really looking forward to, and then we go to Hawaii. So that's just the nice bit in the meantime. And then when I come back, I'm going to do a few cabaret dates at places like the Metropolitan Room and Feinstein's. That would be interesting to get out there.
Oh, how
and,
wonderful.
Reinvent.
Oh, well, I might have to do a Shirley and come and surprise you one night.
Yes.
Me and Shirls can come out.
Yeah, Lady Shirley and
just
young
turn
Lisa,
up.
Come and see us.
I'll be blonde by then, so you won't recognise me.
And she'll be dark hair.
She'll be dark hair. It'd be crazy. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for coming up here today. Honestly, if we had another hour, I could just sit here and just chat away. But unfortunately, I've got to go and interview Josh Brolin.
How exciting!
It's a hard life. But thank you so much, and good luck with everything.
And you.
I can safely.
I want to see your name on a credit list as writer. Lisa Marks.
Yes.
Film.
We'll see if we can get that out there. But,
good.
Well, thank you for your support. And I certainly won't be an overnight sensation if it ever happens. Let me tell you
longer,
that.
That's true.
But no, thank you so much for coming here today. It's been amazing.
Well,
thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Well, sadly, that is all we have time for. That hour just flew by. I hope it did for you too. Bonnie is a lovely lady, and her energy is infectious. I literally bounced all the way down Fifth Avenue to the Ritz-Carlton to interview Josh Brolin, and then I left my tape recorder in his room, so it turned out to be an interesting day. But I must thank Shirley Green for enabling me to meet Bonnie and fixing up this interview, and I also want to thank my producer Danforth France and you for listening. Oh, and if you're interested, the music I used in the show today is from Bonnie's album Jazz at the Theatre. There's a link to Dress Circle on the website, and also check out her website as well, bonnielangford.co.uk. You can email me at podcastfromamerica@gmail.com. Follow the show on Twitter @podcastamerica. And I already have some great stuff lined up in the new year. So I look forward to seeing you then. And I just want to wish you all a happy new year.
Since our ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lena Zaffaroni and Miss Bonnie Langford.